Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm talking about straining for that logo on the side of your helmet and not the name on your back.
Yes, sir.
Because we know what it represents. It represents everybody here you see and everybody you can't that we've talked about. I'm here to strain with you, man. I swear to God, I'm here to strain with you. Let's go. Everything you got, strain with everything you got.
Let's go.
Bills on three. 1, 2, 3. Bills.
You're listening to the Off Tackle with John Fita Show with your host, Joe Miller.
Well, what is going on, everybody? Welcome. Welcome, everybody, into the Off Tackle with John Fina Show, brought to you by Ficta Endel and Elmer Eye Care on the Buffalo Rumblings Vidcast Network. My name is Joe Miller, alongside my good friend John Fina. And John Fina, what this football team needs is a Kyle Williams in that locker room on defense. Imagine that guy at halftime in that game, right?
Well, you weren't in the locker room. I mean, who knows what happens at halftime?
Yeah, you guys are probably.
I mean, they could be ding dongs. They could be playing shuffleboard.
Did you say ding dongs? Did you say ding dongs in the locker room? I guarantee you, there's ding dongs in the locker room. But the question is what else is going
on? No, that hostess ding dongs, you ding dong.
Cheers, my friend. So at least when all else fails, at least we got the whiskey, right?
Yes.
Welcome, everybody, into the show. It is so good to have you. For all of you piling into the comments section, we appreciate your participation. Please do me a favor. Please like, please subscribe, whatever platform you are consuming this podcast on. If you are on YouTube right now, hit that little thumbs up button and hit that like button. Please subscribe if you're also on YouTube and you have not done so yet. If you're listening to this in podcast form on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, please subscribe as well. Maybe leave us a little bit of a review. Myself and John Fina, that'd be great. But let's start the show off and let's hear from our show sponsor, Ficta Endel and Elmer Eye Care. And let's hear from Jay Spence, the King.
Picture this. Crystal clear vision without the hassle of glasses or contacts. Imagine watching Josh Allen's game-changing touchdowns with absolute clarity. At Ficta Endel and Elmer Eye Care, we can make that a reality. Now, in a matter of seconds with Zeiss Smile technology, you can see clearly and get back to doing the things you love as soon as the next day. Visit us online at ficta.com and take our free self-test to see if you're eligible and schedule an evaluation. At Ficta Endel and Elmer Eye Care, we are focused on you. Go Bills.
You got to wonder, can Ficta, and I mean, I know science is amazing, and I know that like technology has come a long way, and this laser eye, Zeiss smile stuff is going on. Is it possible that they can like take our dominant eye and make it crystal clear so that we can see all the amazing plays from Josh Allen and then completely blur out our left eye? So in the second half of the football games, we can like just close our right eye and not see anything. Is that possible?
Yes, that is possible. I spent some time in ophthalmology in my last job, and you could have that done.
So I can watch.
You certainly could.
First half.
The only problem is, at this point, you can't retroactively do it to affect last night's game. So,
yes,
you know, then what are you going to do when it's a great game, and then you're kind of like, one eye going that way? And
yeah,
it's not a good idea, Joe.
I want to ask you a quick question. Actually, before we do that, so let me take a note. And then I want to ask you about your weekend, because you had a really awesome experience this weekend. You got the opportunity, for those that don't know, that have been listening to the show for a long time, or any newcomers to this show, John not only played for the Buffalo Bills, he also played for the Arizona Cardinals. And you are, well, you're from Arizona, but you're not technically from Arizona. But you've lived in Arizona most of your life. And this past weekend, you got the opportunity to be the legend of the game, just like we do here.
No.
Oh, my bad.
Well, it was, they call us ambassadors.
Ambassadors.
And I wasn't the only one. There were, gotcha. I don't know, four, five or six of us, something like that.
Gotcha. Well, tell us about that experience. That's, I'm taking a note because I don't want to lose my train of thought, but I'd love to hear your just about your experience and what they did. And was there a red carpet? Did you roll up in a limo? Right. Was there sushi?
Oh, sushi. well, as far as the red carpet goes, I mean, we basically got to park in the shadow of the stadium. You know, we got really nice parking. We walked in, they gave me a shirt, right? They wanted me to wear the shirt, which was awesome. And they, you know, they took us down, put us in this room where it was mostly like almost like a club level room, but it was down in the basement of the stadium more or less. And we had a table at one end, people came in, and they had the food in that room was like twice as good as anything you get up in the deck at the stadium. So I brought Roman with me.
That's awesome.
And they gave us $50 in food money. Oh. So it wasn't like a private thing for the players. We were with all the fans.
Yeah.
But you know, you just scan your QR code, and it was Sonoran hot dogs and chicken wings and loaded nachos, which were phenomenal. And I didn't drink, but beer and wine and water.
Queso?
And
was there queso?
There was queso on the nachos.
Yes. The Miller family approves.
On the nachos. Miller family approve. That's a touchdown for the Millers.
So you were down there with and amongst fans, right? Which sounds like a perfect environment for you. Yeah.
Yeah, it was great. You know, the fans would just kind of roll up and look at the signs. It was me and John Birch. John didn't play long in the NFL, which I thought was really cool because he only played 2 or 3 years with the Cardinals, yet they treated him like they would any other guy that played 6, 7, 8, 9 years there.
That's awesome.
So they took great care of us. And, you know, we had fun seats in the end zone. So yeah. Roman got to go to his first NFL game.
Oh, that's
unfortunately
awesome.
Unfortunately, not a Buffalo Bills game.
Yeah, but still, that's a great stadium.
But it is a great stadium, a really cool atmosphere. Yeah. And what was really awesome was when they came to the goal line, Roman got to see the bigs up close. And it's phenomenal. It's one thing to be 30 rows up or watch it on TV, but when you're down maybe 10 feet or 15 feet above the guys and you see them move in space at the 3, 4, 5, 10 yard line, it is compelling. It's amazing.
What's wild to me to that point, and I've talked about this on one of the shows or on an opportunity that I was interviewed a couple years ago, Isaiah Hodgins gave me and McKenna on-field passes for the 13-second game. So the Kansas City Bills game in Kansas City, we got to be on the field pregame. And when we were down there, now I would say it this way. So several of the players, Isaiah Hodgins included, back then used to go to our church. Zach Moss, like a lot of the guys. So Zach Moss is a little bit shorter than me. And when you're next to him in church, talking to him, he seems like, I mean, he's built, but he seems like a normal guy. And you get down there on that sideline, and those dudes are in pads with the helmet, and they're like, and Zach is one of the smaller guys one of the smaller guys on the team, and they're like titans. And then like freaking Ryan Bates and like Spencer Brown and these guys are just monsters, and they're fluid. Like when they're like doing the warm up runs where they're just whatever the line, Josh just snapping the ball and handing the ball, and then they're running through the hole. Like it's like there's a measure of, am I too close? Like literally you're at the border. I feel like I'm too close.
Yeah, it can be scary.
It's impressive. Yeah, I
mean, and it goes great. When Mimi and I were at the game last year, you know, I got to bring her right up to Deion Dawkins and gave her a hug. And, you know, I'm not a small guy, but man, I got up next to Deion and I kind of got my juices flowing. Like, yeah, man, I remember when I was I'm a little shorter than he is, but man, the guy's a massive, massive mountain of a man.
Yeah, it's impressive.
So, yeah, it was a great experience. You know, they really did it right. I've been asked to do it for a number of years in a row, and it's just hasn't fit the schedule or what have you. And finally this year, I just said, you know what? Whatever's going on, I don't care. I'm going to commit to a game, and I'm going to roll up there with my kid and just check it out. And it never disappoints. That stadium is really cool. People were pretty great. Game wasn't so awesome, but
yeah, I actually didn't pay attention to any of the card. I'm not up to speed with really anything that happened because we were Christmas tree shopping in the morning, in the afternoon, I should say. And then we watched the game, and then I had to do all this stuff and yada, yada, yada. And everything since then has been a blur, but good. I'm glad that you got that experience. I'm glad that you got to experience it with Roman. It's cool that Roman got to see his dad in that light. Did you wear your AFC championship ring?
I did.
Of course.
I did.
Yeah.
So it was great. I mean, John Birch and I, everybody that came up for an autograph, we stood them up behind the big Cardinals logo and shook hands and, you know, just made it a great experience for everybody. And I think that's what it's really about, you know, making sure that anybody that comes up feels like they are loved by a player that is immersed in the experience.
Right.
You know, rather than being dismissed by a former player.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, and you do
show interest in other people, and they show interest in you, and you end up having a really great exchange.
You do an amazing job, and it's why, you know, the Mafia loves you as much as we do, because you are very true to who you are. And I tell people all the time, because believe it or not, I get asked, whether in person or even in direct messages sometimes, is John, like when I see him on the camera or whatever, or on shows, I'm like, same dude. Like literally, like if you go to Fina Fest, like same guy, 100%. And you're just so ingratiating. And I appreciate that about you more than you will probably ever know. And Jerry's the same way. Jerry is super, super like just friendly and just wants to be kind of in the mix and be a part of it. So that's awesome. I'm glad that you got that experience. And that's a great positive way to start a show that there's good to talk about, right? There was some good that happened in this football game. And then obviously we're going to talk about some of the not so good. So why don't we just kick it off straight from the top with everybody that's in the room with us? And why don't we basically start with your expectations, just thoughts on that football game from what you expected to kind of what we got, right?
Well, I think if you recall, I said we beat the Broncos and lose to the Eagles.
I think you did. Yep.
So I expected a loss, you know, only because at that point, seven games left, there's no way I'm saying you're going to win seven straight, right?
Right,
you just got to pick which ones. It just doesn't happen very often. I was heartened to see that it was as competitive as it was, right? I mean, I thought we'd lose, but man, we had the game right here, right in our fingertips, Joe.
Yep.
Right on the tip of our tongue, you know, ready to, you know, we did. My dad used to say this all the time. We snatched defeat from the jaws of victory.
Yes, you did. That's exactly what happened. You
picked us to beat the snowy egrets, didn't you?
I think I did. There was as well as the Denver Broncos. I feel like there was a moment in this game where it was absolutely a rinse and repeat game. You have coined the phrase on this show, and I'm sure that it's not a phrase that isn't in every NFL locker room and hasn't been for a million years, but it's something that fans don't hear, which is remember the feeling, but forget the game. And there's an aspect of remembering the feeling. And as there's something about, as I've been trying to process what I watched, there's something about the Sean McDermott defense that is very, very good when they are playing from behind. Generally by a score, less than a score of possession, that are playing with a lead, a one possession, 3-point lead, like they will choke you out. This defense is just unbelievable. Even when it's put together with popsicle sticks and duct tape, if it's a close game, they will find a way to just snuff the life out of you. If the Buffalo Bills offense gets up by 17 points, 15, 17, more than that, they get into this prevent mode of not letting anything over the top, and they just literally, and they stay that way, and they just let the other team right back into the game. And it got all that to say this, it got to a point in that game where the Eagles went up again, and I was like, this game's over. Like, I told McKenna, I was like, I don't know. And I don't do that. I don't, in the middle of a game or at the end of a game before the game's over, I never say this game's over. It was familiar. I knew where this game was going. And then the Bills took the lead back, and I was like, oh, like, I was almost in shock. I was like, holy crap. And then they went down, they kicked a 59-yard field goal in the rain. And it was just like, rinse and repeat, right? Rinse and repeat. But there was so much good. They overcame so much. They overcame probably the worst officiated football game I've ever watched in my entire life.
Yeah, I think the calls they made against Buffalo all seemed fairly reasonable. But the ones that they missed on the Eagles were obvious. I mean, you know, everybody calls out the slay tackle on Stephon Diggs near the end of the game, but he did it earlier in the game.
Right.
And it wasn't even close. You know, when the DB has got that arm wrapped around from behind to the back judge, that's automatic.
Flag.
And you can't say, well, he was looking somewhere else. Like, that's where he's supposed to look. The back judge has the middle of the field. The other two guys have the sideline, right? And then you got the line judges and you got the umpire. It's inexcusable. They missed a hold on their offensive line. Jason Kelce clutches and wiggles to an unreasonable extent. You can't keep doing that with the ball. I just think that is bullcrap. And they got him once on it, but he did it multiple times.
They got him twice on it in the same drive.
Late in the fourth quarter on a punt coverage, we were blocked in the back.
Saw it. Yep. Saw it.
I mean, that's impossible to miss. Like, you have to be trying to tie your shoelaces instead of watching your responsibility. Okay. I don't like tying the games to the officials, but it's just anomalous. It's unbelievable to see the disparity in calls.
Your point about the back judge being that's where his eyes are. And the truest way or the truest example of that is not the head ref, but the guy that stands on the opposite side of him. So there's a picture of Stephon Diggs being held, and his jersey is just like this, which is clearly defensive holding. The ball's in the air, so it's now pass interference. And that judge that's on the opposite side of the ref is staring at the offensive line while, like, the play is happening over there. He's not, like, looking at it, right? He's not looking over there. He's looking where he's supposed to look and only where he is supposed to look. So the point you just made is dead on. Like, there's so many of them because they're supposed to be focused on what they're supposed to be focused on. As much as you said that, by and large, we committed the penalties we committed, there was the phantom, in my opinion, holding call on, I think it was either Deion Dawkins or McGovern, where they basically, like, the snap of the ball, he popped out of his stance, his hands went forward, and the defensive lineman tripped and went and fell on his face. And then he put his hands on his back and then stood up. And they're like, flag, holding.
So I painfully watched the game just about 2 hours before our call here. And I saw that play, and at first blush, when I looked at it, I thought, that's not holding. And then, you know, I rewound it a couple times, as I often do. And I thought, well, the problem with it was McGovern would have gotten away with it if he had his hands inside. But he was very clearly, you know, in a bear hug position, ready to pull him down.
Ready to, but didn't.
Even though he didn't, he still had hands on him. And that's, again, you know, officiating, they lack understanding about leverage and momentum. They don't understand it. They're not looking at an individual player for the entire length of the play to understand how things unfold at the end.
Right.
So they don't understand leverage and momentum. And it's terrible.
So Scott F. brings up the next point about the officiating. And again, the overall point here that I was bringing up is the Bills overcame a lot of stuff that was called against them. 11 penalties in the first half.
Not some this one. This one was rough.
Some of them egregious. The horse collar that happened on Josh Allen, his jersey gets ripped. He's got his hand in the back. It doesn't even have to be inside. A lot of people on Twitter are like, well, his hand has to be inside the collar. No, it doesn't. If it's on the pad above the nameplate, It's a horse collar. A 6 foot, almost six, 250-pound man's legs are flinging through the air, right? And the ref is standing right there and then calls intentional grounding, and I'm going somewhere with this, with Gabe Davis, who fell on the football. So two things. Number one, why in the world, because we see it all the time, we saw it with that officiating crew here in Buffalo with Denver, after further review, it was determined, you know, that they did not have an ineligible receiver downfield. Basically, somebody's calling from upstairs going, you missed that one. And they're picking the flag up. And I don't understand for the life of me why somebody didn't say, hey, by the way, I know you're not used to, and Steve Tasker was making this point today, I know you're not used to having a wide receiver there blocking a defensive end, but he's the guy that fell on the football, and that's who Josh was effectively throwing the football at. Here's where I'm going with all of this. What bothered me about that is my house was silent. We were sitting there in disbelief. Like, not only did you not call that horse collar, you doubled down and called intentional grounding. And this is the difference in sports. And I want to know from you as a player, how is Sean McDermott not in the middle of the football field, in the ref's face, in that moment, between Josh's jersey being torn, Gabe Davis being the guy that fell on the football, like, and losing his ever-loving mind, like what happens in baseball, when it's that egregious versus just sitting there on the sideline like, I guess they'll figure this out. And to me, I just don't know how, like, that game did not end up off the rails right there, because that was one of the – that was worse than intentional grounding on a misread between Gabe and Josh throws the ball and it hits the sideline 30 yards downfield. Like, where are you at as a player? Like, it's like, oh, nobody's going to get mad.
Well, let's deal with the horse collar first. Right. Okay, so a lot of officiating ends up on opinion based on a snap in time, right?
Yeah.
A moment in time. Like, I'm making that call because I saw X, Y, Z. So the horse collar to me was, you said he tore the front of his jersey. Well, that's not a horse collar, but the rest of it and the way his body moved, you know, you can make that connection. That guy was horse collared. Boom. Right. So to me, that was like, how do you miss that? I mean, just body mechanics, physics, you're the referee, right? Not an official. You're the referee. Your job is the safety of the quarterback. Make the call.
Right.
That to me is the biggest. Now, going back and looking for a penalty is, I'll stay out of politics here, but, you know, finding a person you don't like and then looking for a crime is what that looked like to me. Like, there's no complainant. Nobody's complaining. And you just like, hey, let's see if we could dig something up on this guy. And I'm like, okay. But I guess by the letter of the law or the rule, the ball has to cross the line of scrimmage.
It has to be multiple things. He's supposed to be outside the tackle box. The ball has to reach the line of scrimmage, which it didn't. And there has to be a receiver in the area. It's like, it's not all three of the criteria. It's a couple and if or buts, right? So it's the rule is ridiculous.
Yeah. I don't like them looking for a penalty.
Right.
That to me, like, the game is hard enough.
Now talk about as a player, your head coach, basically. And they didn't put the camera on Sean, but you would think if he was losing his ever loving mind, they would have put the camera. There's been times as a referee, as a Buffalo, as the head coach of the Bills, that Sean has lost his mind on the sideline where he's mother effing things, and like the camera's been right on his face, and he's been beat red mother effing a referee. Nothing. Like, I don't know how that happened.
I guess I'm sorry. I'm more in the head coach's camp here right now. I don't think that losing your mind is going to affect the decision of New York or the on the field refs. It's just not.
What about the next decision? And there was next ones.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Mm-hmm. Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
There was a phone call after halftime because the penalties stopped. And that doesn't just happen. They stopped completely.
You want to believe that.
There was.
You want to believe that. And the problem with believing that is then you start getting into this, holy crap, the manipulation of the game. And I just don't want to believe that.
I don't want to believe that.
But I also, you know, people talk, I see on Twitter, they should be full-time referees, you know, pay them enough so they don't have to sell insurance or do whatever they do, financial advisor, whatever the hell it is, right? Sell cars.
Right.
I don't know that it would improve. Mm. I don't think it would improve. I think the issue is, and it's a double-edged sword. It's the same way in high school football. Mm. There are not enough officials on the field in high school football catch the real violations.
Right.
Because there's only five.
There's not enough volunteers. There's not enough guys lining up to do the job.
Right. Then cutting it the other way is in high school football, if you added two more officials, the game would extend by an hour and 34 flags.
Wow.
Right. So the same thing exists in the NFL. If you add, why isn't there an official for every eligible receiver? Why aren't there five? Right. There should be a guy looking at Diggs on Slay, looking at Kincaid on so-and-so, on Khalil Shakir on somebody. Right. I mean, then we'd catch them all.
Yeah.
But then we'd catch them all and the game would go from 3 hours and 15 minutes of, you know, viewer enjoyment to 4 hours and 20 minutes of, you know, slit your wrists.
But the problem is, and we can move on from the refs after this. The problem is, there is that oversight. There is that involvement. And you don't need to go any further back than, I think it was 2019, Josh's first year, second year to play as a starter, first year in the playoffs. We're playing the Houston Texans in Houston. And effectively, the ball is kicked. Tyler Bass kicks the ball off. It bounces on the return guy catches the football. And Reed Ferguson just brought this back up, catches the ball and walks over to hand it to the ref. And the ref's like, don't give me that football. It's a live ball. You haven't kneeled on it. You haven't made any determination of what you're going to do. And he drops the ball on the ground and the Bills pick the ball up. And the first signal is touchdown. That's a live football. And then some joker in a black jacket that has never happened in the NFL ever comes out of nowhere, confers with the head official. And they're like, nope, no touchdown. He was down. So there are levers at work. And I don't understand.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I think we should kill this topic because we'll spin around in circles. I agree with you. I think when it comes down to an objective call, you cannot go in and change it. Right.
Right.
I mean, it's just, they don't overturn pass interference. They don't review pass interference. Why don't they review pass interference?
They changed that rule after the Nickell Robey thing happened in the playoffs. Right. And then after 1 year, they canned it because it's just, that's such an objective call. It's hard to know what is blatant.
It's an objective call, but in the circumstances where it's egregious and it happened to the Bills twice, how come,
Why can't they do something?
Yeah, look, you're right. This will always be imperfect, and you will always be vexed by this. Hey, Danny Kwan, how you doing, buddy?
So anyways, final thoughts just kind of on the game before we get into the good, the bad, and you know, maybe what they're going to work on over the break here. Final just overarching thoughts.
It's a litany of heartbreak.
Agreed.
But I will absolutely say this. I defended Dorsey. I thought Dorsey would grow. And now Joe Miller's doppelganger.
Oh my gosh.
I was skinny. The guy.
He looks just like me. When I was skinny, that's exactly what I look like.
he's the guy. I love what I'm seeing. I think he's terrific. And I mean, I'm so excited. I even forgot his name. Is it Joe?
Joe Brady. What's interesting? Joe Brady. I said to somebody today, I feel like after two games, especially watching that Eagles game, because we clearly got 2020, 2021 Josh Allen back. I feel like when Josh Allen against the Jets last week said, "I'm back, I'm effing back," which he claims he was quoting John Wick, which is fine. I feel like that was not only to himself, but it was also being projected on Ken Dorsey a little bit. Like, we are doing things that I can do now, right? Like, I'm back. This is me, and we're going. And it's been fun to watch for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah. Okay. The good.
That was part of the good, but that's why I threw that up there, because that was part of the
good. Yeah, no, but, you know, the kind of overall thoughts, right? So the good, Joe Brady, for sure. I thought our defensive front four was pretty terrific.
Not named Von Miller.
until the end, until the last series when we needed somebody to make a great play. But, yeah, you know, I think by and large, Greg Rousseau had some really nice flashes, right?
Yeah.
Leonard Floyd continues to show that he needs to stay in Buffalo.
And stay on the field. He needs to stay on the field. Leave that guy in the field. Rotate Epenesa and Rousseau and keep Leonard Floyd on the field, right?
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I like that we don't even talk about our linebackers. Like, I watched the game, and there was no cause for me to go, man, damn it, Dotson, you know.
Well, there was the one play that Jalen Hurts juked him out of his tennis shoes. But Terrell Dotson is not the most athletic linebacker on the football field. He probably shouldn't be spying Jalen Hurts. And let's be honest, Jalen Hurts is going to juke just about anybody out of their Bobby socks.
Well, that's true. Right. You know, but, you know, okay.
Josh Allen does it to everybody. Linemen.
I don't know exactly. That's where I was going to go with that, right? But they corralled him by and large, except for about two or three plays. I thought the secondary played fair until maybe the philosophy took over in the last drive of the overtime.
Question.
Offensively.
Sorry. A question just about that, because you said the philosophy took over. You were, for 2 years, part of a Super Bowl run. Was Walt Corey there when you were there? Did they fire him after the first Dallas Cowboys game? The second one. So the big complaint, the big bruise, the big black eye was the fact that bend but don't break defense is what was the problem. As an offensive player, were you ever like, could you guys stop somebody, please? Like, I mean, where were you on that philosophy?
Well, I might think that, but I was part and parcel to a lot of really crappy drives. So, you know, I don't want to get out over my skis. I'm not that type of guy. And that wasn't me. Now, there were guys who would be that guy, but it wasn't me. I didn't. That's just not my nature. But it is very clear to me that had we Wade Phillips for four Super Bowls, we'd have been 3-1
for sure,
or 4-0.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, there's no question that Wade was able to look at the tools that he had and be able to say, "How can I get the most out of these bodies? These guys that are creative, fast, strong, and what do they do best? How can I free them up?" And I did not love Walt's defense. It goes back to my college training with Pat Hill, the offensive line coach. He was like, "I love it when they line up like that. I mean, it's like a dartboard. You know where they're going to be every play. You know, just win your individual battles and and we're going to run it down their throat.
That's literally what happened on the last play, the walk-off touchdown. The Bills went cover zero, and one of the Philadelphia offensive players, I don't remember which one, said when they lined up in that, we just knew. We knew in our mind what play is coming. Everybody on the field knew the play call, and regardless of the play call, what was about to happen, Jalen was going to go because that's the look they gave him. Like, this is our look.
There were seven plays before that where, I've said it repeatedly on this show. I'm a die by the sword guy, right? Not death by a thousand cuts. I'm coming after him. They put amazing pressure on Jalen Hurts that entire game.
Yep.
I mean, they were swarming him that first drive. I was like, whoa, all right. Impressive. I'm digging this.
Impressive.
And then, you know, I want to go after him. I want to go after him, and they didn't, and they rushed four, and until I know a hell of a lot more about defense and take a job somewhere, I'm just like you. But I wouldn't do it that way.
You're definitely not just like me. I loved what I saw from the run game. I loved what I saw from the run game.
We haven't even gotten to the offensive side of the ball. I do, yeah. And there were multiple instances where Ty Johnson or Latavius Murray or James Cook only picked up a yard. We had a couple of negative yardage plays, but you know, Osiris Torrance had two bad blocks. Gabe Davis had two miserable blocks.
We're on the good. We're not on the bad yet, so we're on the good still.
Damn.
I loved what I saw in the run game. Right. I loved what you and Jerry always talk about, which is you hammer, and then eventually it opens up. And they talked about it on the broadcast a little bit, but we witnessed that in that football game. We also witnessed the Eagles do it to the Bills. They found a crease, they found something that worked, and they just kept running it, and the Bills didn't adjust. But it was interesting to see the Bills just kind of like sprinkle it in, and then finally just wore them down. And then there was that one long drive, it was seven run plays in a row or something like that, that you could feel the momentum swing. It swung right back to the Eagles, but there was that was a statement drive, in my opinion.
Yeah. Okay, so the run game in its entirety was pretty damn good.
Mm-hmm. How much does Josh Allen soften up those plays for the other running backs?
In what respect are you asking that? Meaning
getting
his ability to run?
Getting him back to what, like, obviously making the quarterback a threat makes them responsible. It's no longer 11 on 10. It's now 11 on 11, right? Which is a problem for defenses because they no longer have the man advantage. But how much does his ability to basically defeat them with his legs put them in a position where, right, they're able to be defeated further by the other running backs? I don't know if I worked.
No, that. I don't really think that Josh running the ball affects, you know, our running game, because typically he's running in a passing situation or passing a formation that lends itself to pass. I just think it's a brilliant thing to do with a guy who loves to do it, right? And curtailing that is not a good idea. And he, you know, he pick and chose his moments there, and there was one called run play, which he delivered on, you know, exceedingly well. I thought it was really nice balance between run and pass. You know, and that's, I don't want to pick names right now, but, you know, I think probably the best offensive lineman in the game might have been Spencer Brown.
Oh, I knew you were going to say that. I have a bad on Spencer Brown, which you saw. I know you did. Your daughter says she loves your shirt. Do you want to share your shirt to the world?
It's your shirt, Mimi.
Mimi, MMF, Mimi Fina. So,
MFers.
I love, there was so much from this football game that I just felt was quintessential Buffalo Bills, what we've seen over the last couple of years, right down to the way they lost. I mean, this is one of those, you know, game of the year, right? The one that's going to go down in history, one that's going to be remembered for a long time. It just had all of those pieces. I just wish we could come out on the right side of one of these damn games.
Right. Okay, I'm done with the good. I'm kind of all out.
There you go.
I've run out of the good.
So you talked about Spencer Brown. There was one, and you have taught us a lot about offensive line, first steps, first strikes, first moves, first this, first that. There was a play in particular, and I think Josh got sacked on it, where Spencer came out of his stance, arms down, and went head first into the defender. And the defender basically just pressed into his shoulder and ran right around him. I was like, what in the hell was that? His arms weren't up. He literally just lunged forward. Like, I don't, did you see that play? And I know you can't tell me what he was doing, but did you see the play I'm talking about? If not, I'll find it and I'll send it to you later.
Well, you can send it to me later. I mean, I watched every damn play, but because I was so late, you know, with work up in Phoenix and driving back, I didn't dissect a lot of it.
I'll send it to you.
Look, I mean, that's no worse than Osiris. Torrance had like, I mean, he had four blunders in the game, including a Matador move that really hurt us. Mm. Gabe Davis had a couple of Matador moves on down blocks.
Right.
I thought Mitch Morse was good. I think he and probably Spencer were the best players. Mitch got kind of pushed a little bit a couple times. McGovern, you know, the holding penalty, the holding penalty, and then the two on Dion. You know, it's just hard to say that you had a great game when you got two holding penalties.
Right, for sure. You know?
And take that from a guy who had less than seven in his entire career.
Yep. So I, from a needs work, from a bad perspective, the gym that I go to,
I mean, James Cook, you're not a rookie. Catch the opening drive touchdown pass. Catch it and run it in.
There's
Tyler Bass, you got to get the damn ball over the guy jumping at the line of scrimmage. That's a bad kick. And don't miss the damn kick.
Through the uprights. The gym that I go to in Elma, STA Performance, Ben Woods Gym.
You said gym? You go to a gym?
All the time.
You pronounced bar wrong.
I don't go to bars. I go to the unless the mafia is going to be there for like home opener or something. But there's a lot of I know. There's a lot of football players in the offseason that work out there, like guys that are from Buffalo, particularly. There's guys that are from Buffalo in the Canadian Football League. Well, there's a professional quarterback, nobody of note necessarily, but he plays in the Canadian Football League, and he was at the gym this morning because their season's over. And I asked him. I said, "Look, because this was a big thing for me on my show last night, and I tweeted about it today. You know, how many times does Josh Allen have to walk off the field a winner and walk to the locker room a loser? Sometimes more than once in a game. How many times? So that's basically where my head has been since this game ended, because he did it again. He walked off the field a winner, walked to the locker room a loser twice, if that makes any sense. And I asked him. I asked him that question. I said, "Bro, I was like, as a quarterback, where is your headspace on this?" And the first thing he said was interesting to me, because in my opinion, it was the quintessential separation of responsibility, siloed football statement, which was, "Well, that's not on me. I did my job as a quarterback, right? Like, that's not on me. Like, I can't worry about what they're doing. I'm worried about what I'm doing." And I said, "Yeah, but if it happens for 4 years, like if it happens over and over again for 4 years, what's the breaking point?" And he literally said, "There's a point where I go to the owner." And I'm like, something's got to change. Like, this doesn't.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. But Josh threw a really awful pick.
Oh, right? My God. One pick. This is so fun. One, Josh, if James Cook would have caught that football, we win the game. If Josh didn't throw that interception, we win the football game. That was even Joe Marino said that Sean McDermott got Sirianni coach circles around him. He got out coached so bad. It was not even.
When do I get to finish?
Okay, go ahead.
All right. So that was a really bad decision. All right. He should have thrown to Diggs on the sideline. And in the first half, he had probably three or four mediocre to bad throws.
The first half where they came out of it winning by 10 points.
Yeah, but
okay.
If he makes the better throw, maybe we're up by 21.
If they don't have 11 penalties, they're probably winning by four touchdowns.
Well, I'm just saying that I'm not quite disagreeing with you, mm-hmm. but you know, if you're going to go talk about other people, other performance, you know, you've got to offer a little bit more in your decision making and in your performance. I thought the throw to Dalton Kincaid was too high, even though he could have reeled it in. There's a lot of things there.
But downpouring, and he accounted for 400 yards and four touchdowns. What more do you want from the guy?
I want him to make every throw perfect.
So now we're at the point where every run should be a touchdown run. Every pass should be a touchdown pass. Every defensive play
should be a back. No, but what I'm talking about in response to your when do you go to the owner type of thing, I don't think Josh is there. I don't think he's that guy that he can go in and start, you know, calling shots like that.
I agree. I don't think his hubris.
Okay. Well, that's what I'm saying.
I don't think his hubris has gotten to the point yet where he realizes he has more franchise power than the head coach does.
Agree. And that's my point by saying that. I don't expect him to play a perfect game, but I also don't think that he's risen to the point where he can make that sort of.
In his own mind. You know, he's there. He just doesn't realize it yet.
Okay.
The Bills are on the hook to pay him $300. The Bills are on the hook to pay him $300 million. He's there.
I think you and I mostly agree on this.
I would say yes. I think for me, there's an aspect of like I'm having a hard time with the people that want to defend Sean McDermott. After I even started the show and you agreed with this was a familiar feeling, and it's not one time. It's not two times. It's not three times. It's not five times. It's not eight times. It's happened a lot in the last 4 years. And then it's like, yeah, but Josh threw a pick.
No. I'm just saying everything contributes, right? And I get it. I don't, and I've already said I don't agree with the defensive style in overtime. I think by and large, you know, a couple of things really hurt us in the game. I think James Cook dropping that ball is just
crushing.
Awful.
Crushing.
I think the missed calls by the officiating were, you know, destructive, right? Mm-hmm. And then Tyler Bass was just rotten.
It wasn't great.
Just terrible.
I was wondering what they were going to do, if they got to the point where they had to run him back out on the field, and they did. I was surprised that they did. I thought that they were going to get to the point where it's like, yep, we're just going to go for it. They're going to pull a St. Louis Rams, right? When the Rams basically were like, we're the greatest show on turf. We're just not going to kick field goals. We're just going to go for it.
Yeah, and I see people in the comments saying that, I expect more from Josh. I don't. I think he's playing very well. I also think that we also, you know, Joe Brady is taking the same playbook. I think he's calling better plays, but there is also different plays in there. We are running these wide receiver screens a hell of a lot better. We're utilizing our running backs in the passing game a hell of a lot better. But you have to think that there's an installation and a maturity and an absorption of all of this that puts you back at training camp a little bit, right? Because you still only have this much time in a day, Joe Miller.
Yes, sure.
Right? You can't, just because you want to do more shit doesn't mean you can make the day longer.
CBA, it was a union and the players got power.
I would love to have a 28-hour day twice a week, but I ain't getting it.
What else you got for work? There was a lot from this game. It was amazing how good it was. And it was amazing how upsetting it was, right? I mean, the two facets of this football game, it was a roller coaster of emotions. It was an incredible football game. It was entertaining, right? So we are at the point of Maximus Decimus Meridius. Are you not entertained, right? I mean, that's where we're at.
It's hard to say on the work. I think the pieces are really in place. And I think, what we talked about and what my old college coach used to say is big time players make big time plays in big games. And that means don't drop the ball. That means don't whiff on the block. You know, don't miss an assignment.
It also means make the tackle. Don't let the guy behind you. It means, right? Don't get outside of your gap. Sack the quarterback.
That's right.
I think
somewhere along the way, there's been a, and it could be at an individual level. We always used to say Josh carries the team on our shoulders a little bit. And I don't think it's always just Josh. I think when you're struggling, when you're finding that success is getting harder to achieve, everybody has a little bit of that. So you're a little bit like a dog in a butcher shop. You're going after everything. And everybody has to kind of like settle back and say, all right, on this particular play, what's their alignment? What's my assignment? What's the snap count? I need to execute what I do.
Right.
And I cannot do any more than what I can do. That's all I owe everybody, and that's all I am.
And, what do you feel about 13 seconds? So 13 seconds is in your mind, right? You've got that in your head. And you've got situations from this quarterback as recent as Thanksgiving of last year where the Buffalo Bills had I think, 24 seconds. And he throws a frozen rope 35 or 40 yards to put the Bills in field goal range, hits Stephon Diggs in a window that's about the size of like, you know, a shed window out the side. Like, and then yesterday, you know, Coach McDermott takes the ball out of his hands. And I'm reminded, I don't know if you watch football movies, like the movie The Replacements with Keanu Reeves. There's a scene in that movie at the end where like it's the last play of the game and the head coach who's Gene Hackman says, you know, what do you want? And Keanu Reeves says, I want the ball. And he says, winners always do. And you've got a head coach that basically took the ball out of Josh's hand. You got 20 seconds. You've got one timeout after you pissed away one for trying to ice a kicker, which never works for the Bills. Like, learn a lesson. It never works for you, Sean. Stop doing it. But you got 20 seconds. You're on the 25-yard line. I know the worst that could happen. The worst that could happen is he throws the pick. They end up in field goal range. You lose. You just said it. But you want to be aggressive. And you kneel on the football. You just basically,
Yeah, I'm with you on two of those points.
Okay.
I don't like icing kickers. I don't think it works by and large. I think it's just if you have 20 seconds left and, you know, I think the smart play is like, let's see what we can do. We got some players. We've had pretty damn good protection the entire game. We can roll our guy out of the pocket, and if he doesn't see anything, he can throw it away. We can try it one more time. We got two timeouts. Time's out, sorry. And fine. you could get three plays out of that.
Yeah.
And if it ends up being nothing, what did you lose? And I'm with you. I don't like it. But is that enough to get Sean McDermott fired? Is the historical strange ending to too many damn games enough to get him fired? Is that your next expectation, well, Joe Miller?
No, it's not my next expectation. however, as a former player and a player that has been part of a team that had great culture and then had bad culture, you have been witness to a team losing a locker room or a coach losing a locker room, I think. And I guess that's my question. What does that look like? How does that feel? Because there's kinks in the armor, in my opinion, which include, I don't care what was being said. I don't care how much they were being threatened. I don't care if the dude in the stands had a gun or a knife. Five of your players, your defensive players, your unit turned around and went to the stands. One of them shoved a fan in the stands. To me, there's kinks in this. There's frustrations that are boiling up. That's my question. At what point have you...
I don't think there was a question. What's the question?
So it's coming. At what point does the phrase, remember the feeling, forget the game? When does it start? I remember the feeling and I'm remembering the games. Where does it turn into, here we go again?
Well, I'll say this. Judge not, lest ye be judged. So I cannot, that's for me, not for you. I can't comment on the behavior post game because I had Buffalo fans
in the game. It was during the game.
I thought it was at the end of the game.
During the football game, there was a fan that was belligerent. He was apparently threatening them. He was way too close.
And their families. And they had asked for that fan to be removed.
They did. Yep. Reportedly. So we don't know if that's true or not, but that's what they said. Yes.
I am certain that that happened because we have our security team on the sideline. And when things like that are out of control, I think the guys are smart enough to make that first step. Get this guy out of here.
Right.
So I am guilty of the same thing. So I can't really comment post game.
Yeah. But to me, post game is different. Post game is different than a head coach. Not losing control of his players is not the right word I'm using. I'm just saying there's little things. It's the Jerry Hughesisms, right? There was aspects and things that Jerry Hughes used to do at the end of, and I think it was Marone, like he just started getting a little bit out of control. He started getting outside of himself. It's like, Jerry, what are you doing? Like, what's happening in that locker room that's causing you to act this way, right?
I'm not with you on this one.
Okay, that's fine. What do you see from the Buffalo Bills kind of going through this bye week? I mean, is it back to, you know, it's a week-to-week league. We got to go 1-0 every week, and we're at the bottom looking up, but we can make it and we can do this. We just got to go 1-0 every week. Is that presser talk, that's coach speak, but you know, where are their heads at right now?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because I never really know what to say when you say, oh, it's a week to week league. All right. So what do you say? I mean, what do you say? We have to win the next one. Everything that we're doing right now is based on winning the next game. So that is our number one mission. Is that enough for you, Joe Miller?
No, it's
because
not.
What do you need to say? Like, the end of the world is coming if we don't beat the Kansas City Chiefs.
The end of the world is coming. That's a great conversation to have.
Our season is on the line. Every week our season is on the line. Is that enough?
Look around the locker room, because if we lose this next football game, the guys that are sitting next to you are more than likely not going to be here next year, because there's going to be a lot of changes being made. It's time, effectively, not to mention they've got salary cap issues going into next year. For me,
you want the coach to threaten guys on the team.
No. That to me, that's player to player. I said, where are the players at? I didn't say where the coach is at. I said, where are the players at? So I'm talking about
the players know what's at stake. They know what's at stake. They know they have to win out.
Gotcha.
And
for me to answer,
they are all taking this at like the top priority. They know they have to win out.
For me, you asked the question, what would I do? So as a student of leadership, I'm a firm believer that in a void of leadership, a leader will arise or a leader will emerge. And as an Enneagram 8, an INTJ, there's a lot of misunderstanding about my personality. And my personality type is widely perceived as being somebody that just wants to take over. And that's not who we are. We are not somebody that wants to take over. However, if there's a lack of leadership, if there's a situation where there's a void in leadership, we will take over in that moment. But if there's a strong, firm leader in the room and somebody that's got a vision and passion and something that we believe in, or he believes in, or she believes in enough that we can follow it, we will get right in line. So for me, there's an aspect of like inside of that locker room, what are those conversations? What's being talked about? It goes back to what I started the show with. Imagine you've got Josh Allen, who's the emotional leader along with Stephon Diggs of that offense. They're missing a Kyle Williams on that defense. They're missing a guy that can pull that team together and say, I don't give a sheet about what the name on your back. It's about the logo on the side of your helmet. And that's all that matters.
I think they're there. I don't think they're present in the media. And that's a misconception. I think you've got plenty of leaders. I think between Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer, Von Miller, I think there's strong enough leadership on the defense.
Von Miller has lied to the Buffalo Bills fan base more than any Buffalo Bill in years. He stood at microphones, in pressers, on his podcast, and just straight up lied to Bills Mafia. Oh, Spence and I joke about it all the time. Odell Beckham is going to be a Buffalo Bill. I'm going to play by this time. I'm only going to be that.
But I think that he lends leadership in the locker room. I think, you know, his personality in the public eye is different. I mean, I'm not in there. I think that probably Ed Oliver probably has some good leadership skills, but it might be a little bit thin. A lot of stuff happens when that door closes that you and I don't see.
100%, totally agree. So I guess my last question.
But I don't think they've lost control of the locker room. I think what happened on the sideline is a function of that.
My last question to you would be this. And I know that everybody responds differently to different types of leaders, different types of communication. So I know that the messaging sometimes has to be paired to the individual. However, that being said, you played with Jim Kelly, who was a mother effer. He was an a-hole as a quarterback, but he was a leader and he got crap done. And you probably also played with quarterbacks, Todd Collins, that were very passive. And I just want to lead by example. And I'm just quiet. and I'm small in personality. And I don't know if that's Todd, but I'm sure that there was somebody in there. We saw it through the drought. You've got guys like J.P. Lausman, who was injured by, I can't remember who the defensive player was, because he was kind of a jerk, is what the rumor is in practice. So, like, somebody went after him in training camp and broke his leg. And then you've got Trent Edwards, who basically is like, yeah, I don't really get up in front of the team and talk. I just figure I'll go out there and play, and we'll score touchdowns, and everybody will follow me. And it's like, that doesn't work. It just doesn't work. I just feel like somebody's got to get a hold of this team from a player standpoint, and I know Josh has it from his side. I just feel like the teams you were a part of that were Hall of Fame teams that put nine Hall of Famers or nine players in the Hall of Fame had more. You talk about it all the time. Jim and Thurman and Bruce and Daryl, like the guys you list off.
Well, I get what you're saying, but I was in those locker rooms. You and I aren't in the locker room right now.
But you saw it eke out in the media. You saw it eke out in the community. You saw it eke out. I was in Florida, and I knew that Jim Kelly was not like people respected his play in the field, but he was kind of a jerk. Like, I was in Florida and knew that as a kid. In 1990, before the internet.
And you still got to beat the other team, Joe. And true. They still line up. And true. I'm not going to go at this point and say there's a void in leadership. I think that they have hurt themselves. They've had injuries that have hurt them. I think, shockingly, that Ken Dorsey might have been really the reason we lost three games. You know, if you look at it in a kind of a volume of holy crap, the difference between the offense now and then.
Well, you can go back to the last six games of last year where it kind of began, that it kind of got off the rails.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So, look, they know, and I'm sure there's enough voices in that locker room. They know that if they want to get to postseason play, they almost have to win out.
I love
or
it.
Or get a lot of help.
Or get a lot. They're going to need to do both at this point. So they're at the 10 spot. I mean, there's no world where, in my opinion, you've got Josh Allen, Ed Oliver, Von Miller, Stephon Diggs. You look at this roster, there's no world where it should be acceptable when you're at the end of the year having a conversation with Brandon Bean and the owner, and you've given up a playoff spot to the Steelers, the Browns, and the Colts. Two of those teams with backup quarterbacks, one of them on their fourth, and the other one with a very subpar starting quarterback. Like, there's an aspect of, like, something's wrong somewhere, right?
Yeah, it hurts.
It hurts. That we can agree on. It hurts, man.
It hurts.
John, I love you, and I pressed you in this show, and I apologize. There's just, as a fan...
I'm on board with you. And I say this, like, I say it in hopes that it's happening. I don't know. I'm not in that locker room.
Right.
But I just can't believe that grown men at this level of play are not the vocal, you know, though I believe that those conversations are happening. What I'm trying to impart to you is that it doesn't always give you the result that you want.
That's fair. I agree.
And that sucks. But when you don't get the result that you want, it doesn't mean that those things don't exist either.
Gotcha. That's good. That's well said.
And, right.
That's super well said.
But we're in that point where we're like, you know, we want to just point and say, well, it's this, it's that, because we're frustrated also, and we're not in that damn locker room, and I would love to be in that damn locker room. How's that?
Fly on the wall. You'd be a very large fly on the wall. I think they'd be like, John Venus.
Did you literally just fat shame me on my own podcast?
No, I alto shamed you. I tall shamed you.
Buffalo Freddy, make the call on that. Damn.
They'd be like, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's John Fina stuck on the wall over there. That'd be amazing. Oh, that's good. Ladies and gentlemen, you have been tuned into the Off Tackle with John Fina show with that guy right there, John Fina, brought to you by Ficta, Endel, and Elmer Eye Care on the Buffalo Rumblings Vidcast Network. We had a good time on the show, and John, I always have a good time with you, and I appreciate sometimes you let me, as you like to say, get out over my skis and ask you questions and press you a little bit. I just feel like, you know, if they're in the locker room kind of pressing each other, maybe you and I should press each other a little bit too. So I appreciate you. Any final words before we get out of here?
Yeah, anybody listening live tomorrow, Eric Wood, Jerry Ostrowski, Jay Spence, The King, and John Fina are doing a special code of conduct. I don't know if it's live. My God, that would be amazing. Or if it's recorded, but you are going to want to listen to Eric Wood, Jerry Ostrowski, and John Fina duke it out about the quality, the evolution, and the skill set of your Buffalo Bills offensive line.
Absolutely love that. It is a must-see TV, in my opinion. You definitely do not want to miss it. For me, for John Fina, for all of the Buffalo Rumblings, do not miss the show tomorrow. Thank you guys so much for joining us this evening. We love you guys. Go Bills.
Be good, everybody. Miss your lost loved ones and hold your dear loved ones close. And go Bills.
Go Bills.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.